And welcome to Open Minds UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with Martin Chillin' Willis.
Chillin'.
Because you're a pretty chill dude.
I am today.
Yeah, well, you usually are, right? I've never heard you, like, get really flustered or upset and, like, yell and cuss or just kind of... Well, no, I shouldn't say that. I've heard a little bit of that, I think, before. Maybe offline, but nothing real big.
Yeah, behind the scenes.
Yes, behind the scenes, Martin is a crazy tyrant.
Madman.
But we were even listening to one of your shows the other day, and, you know, you're very chill.
Yeah, I put myself to sleep in my own shows, yeah.
So my guest today is Chuck Zukowski. Of course, we were out at this Devil's Tower event in Wyoming, and Chuck is a good friend of mine. So people who have been listening to the show for many, many years, which some have been with us for a long time, they know I used to have Chuck on quite a bit a long time ago, and it's been, I think, actually a few years since I've had him on. But so it's about time that we catch up. But one of the things Chuck's been doing is he's been busy with this book that came out, The 37th Parallel. Like, a lot of people have interviewed Ben Mezrich, and he is the author of the book. However, the book is about Chuck Zukowski and his sister, Debbie Ziegelmeyer, and their work investigating UFOs and the paranormal, and how they feel that there's a lot of, you know, strange stuff going on along the 37th Parallel. Now, Ben Mezrich, I could see why people would want to interview him, because he's well-known. He's a, you know, New York Times best-selling author, and he's written books that have been made into movies, including this one. I don't know if the movie was called Straight Flush. I think it was called something else, but it was about this college kid who figured out how to, you know, do kind of like some method of winning at poker and won a bunch of money. The Social Network, and that was a movie, you know, about Facebook and the founding of Facebook. So those are the books he's written. And now this 37th Parallel, and we'll go over this with Chuck, is in the works to being made into a movie also.
Really? So is this movie, did you say it was actually about Chuck and his sister?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. And that's like, there's some really big names involved. In fact, in the interview that we're going to listen to in a minute, he kind of dropped some bombs, some names of some of the people involved, and I don't think he shared that before, and they are some big, big names, but I don't want to tell you now, because some people maybe go, oh, I just got the best part. They just, like, read the last page of the book to me, so I'm just going to quit listening, because I've heard the best.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I haven't had Ben Mezrich on because I was one of the first people to have Chuck on talking about the 37th Parallel when he came up with the idea. It was partially off of some Open Minds trending that I had done, and because we worked together on different stuff. And so it was like, well, why do I want to interview this guy who's written the book when I've talked to, when I can go to the source? So I haven't had Ben Mezrich on. But I think Chuck's kind of convinced me maybe I should look to do that. And they had asked me if I wanted to have him on. You probably, I wouldn't doubt if you got a note from them too, have you? That you can think of?
No, I don't remember. It's possible though.
Yeah, you probably did in your email somewhere. So yes, that's who's on the show. Have you had Chuck Zukowski on?
I have not.
Oh, he's a neat guy. Have you met him?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. So one day maybe we'll be together and I'll be able to introduce you to him. And what about Debbie Ziegelmeyer? She's on the board of MUFON and she's the state director in Missouri.
No, but I'll have to there get you her go. On.
Yeah, she did a great job. She did a talk out there in Wyoming. They're always together in a pair. And a lot of times they'll present together. But this was nice because they presented separately, and Debbie did a great job. Some really interesting cases from Missouri that she talked about. So it was a very fun time, cool event. And I've got some pictures and stuff up on my Facebook, so people can go look at that. But I guess let's go ahead and get into the news.
Okay, just before that, I just want to tell you that I did find an email that I sent to someone about that book, The 37th Parallel, but I did not get a reply.
I was trying to do actually The Price is Right, but that's kind of a harder one to do. That's kind of a, I don't know, I can't do it.
All right, so the news. And so this was written by a one Alejandro Rojas.
Hey, that's me.
That's you on September 20th. So this has to do with the disappearance of the UK's most spectacular UFO photo. So hanging on the wall near the British government's UFO desk was one of the men who occupied that desk called the most spectacular UFO photo ever sent to the Ministry of Defense, the MOD. The photo disappeared, however, since then. And, well, it was Nick Pope, of course, and he ran the MOD's UFO project from 1991 to 1994, and when he was first assigned to the position, he wasn't excited about it, and he felt the issue was ridiculous, and he was not looking forward to have to deal with a bunch of UFO nuts and all that stuff. Well, over the years, Pope found some very credible cases of incredible things, and he began to see there was something really mysterious about the phenomena. And one of the cases that led him to the conclusion that had to do with a photo that was made into a poster, or it was like a poster size, that he found hung near his desk when he began the work. And so anyway, the photo showed a picture of a large diamond-shaped craft with a jet in the background. And when he asked about the photo, he was told that they officially determined the image was real. And they estimated the craft to be about 25 meters, which is just over 80 feet in diameter. If asked, they were instructed to answer no definite conclusion that had been reached regarding the large diamond-shaped object. So anyway, this this photograph just disappeared, and no one knew what happened to it. Is that right? I mean, I'm not going to read through this whole
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's what's fun about this story. Now, I've heard Nick tell this story over the years several times, and I've always been very intrigued by it. So it's about time I wrote something about it. But also, Channel 5 did a recreation of this poster, of this image. And I don't know when they did it, but I've only seen it maybe in the last couple of years. And it's a really cool rendition. I mean, and Nick worked with them to try to get it accurate. And it's an amazing picture of, you know, this metallic diamond-shaped thing. Of course, this is CGI, but it's as close to the original as possible. And Nick says it's pretty close to what was hanging in the office. So the story's cool, but then coupled with now that we have this recreation, makes it even more exciting. So it's one of those stories where sometimes you think, you know what, this is a really good story. I kind of take it for granted because I've heard it so much, but I should write something about it so people have kind of a record of it. And so I did. Nick's got a more in-depth write-up of this whole event that you can go see, including some information about the UK MOD UFO files regarding the case that this took place. And as for that case, it was 1990 when this couple in Calvin essentially saw this, took some photographs. They remained anonymous, but they sent them to the Scottish Daily newspaper. The Scottish Daily then asked the MOD about it, and the MOD said, let us take a look. Would you mind if we took the pictures and the negatives? And somehow the paper let them, so they kept the negatives. But yeah, this poster was on the wall when Nick showed up his first day. He found the case to be incredible. People said it was real. And then his boss took it down eventually. And this is interesting. So his boss essentially became convinced that it was some sort of high-tech thing that was probably American. And even though...
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And even though the Americans and the departments they contacted denied saying, you know, we don't know what it is, they his boss just became convinced that this was kind of a American and British secret. And so he thought, you know, if this is a secret, being patriots, we should take this poster down and help, you know, keep the secret. And so he took it down, and Nick never saw it again. He thinks it was probably shredded. But that's speculation on Nick's part as far as, you know, the motivations of his boss. But I guess his boss was convinced it was some sort of top secret aircraft. But what's incredible...
But why would... Mm-hmm. Why would an American top secret project be tested in Scotland? Isn't that kind of bizarre?
It is very bizarre. Maybe for secrecy or something. Not only that, it's, you know, an 80 diameter, you know, metallic thing hovering in the sky and taking off at high speed, and that's quite a technology for, you know, what, 30 years ago. So
yeah, it took off vertically, straight up. Yeah.
So yeah, this is a big mystery. This is I think one of the great stories, UK UFO stories out there. So yeah, finally wrote something up on that. Really cool.
Yeah.
It got anything else?
No. It does look like it has a little tail to it, though.
I don't know what that part is trying to portray. And, you know, Nick does not address that in his write-up of this story. But I would like to ask him that question because, yeah, it does have some kind of weird little tail or poof or I don't know what that is on the right end of it. And interesting to note, too, that they're not sure what the aircraft was. They think it might have been a Harrier. There were people, jets flying around at that time, you know, military stuff, but they were not able to contact any pilot who they could be sure was the person flying the plane, and they're not sure if the pilot even noticed the UFO, and so, you know, that's still kind of a mystery.
Yeah. Well, like my guest that you've had on your show, Richard Thieme, and a number of other people have said that I'm sure you've talked to, that we only see about, you know, 20 years. I mean, there's 20 years of military, secret military craft that we don't even know anything about yet.
Yeah, that's general. What they usually say. You know, there was a story, Area 51, a plane crashed recently, and it was very hush-hush. They announced a couple days after the incident that the pilot had died in the crash, and that's how people found out about it. But they would not say what sort of aircraft it was. They said what it wasn't, and because people ask, is it this, is it that, which are all the known craft we know about, and they were like, nope, it's none of those. So that some sort of top secret craft, who knows what the heck this thing was that crashed out there recently, and unfortunately the pilot did not survive.
Wow.
Yeah. So another story I wrote. Is it okay to move on?
Yeah, is this an awkward moment again?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's Martin.
I'm
gonna blame you. Well. No, it's both, because it's but it's fun to be awkward.
Like that's right.
it's hip to be square type of thing.
Right.
So, yeah, Spielberg. So, Wyoming, actually, a few stories came out of Wyoming. One of those that I wrote, and I put it on Huffington Post this weekend, is regarding Spielberg. So, you know, we had Lee Spiegel on recently, and we've had him on in the past. But essentially, that story he told us just a couple weeks ago, And I think he's told me before where he met Spielberg. But I wrote that up, and I got a YouTube interview of him talking about it, and I embedded that. But I also found, at least in the Huffington Post version, and I'm going to add this to the Open Minds version, a really cool couple minutes of Spielberg and the other actors of the movie talking about Hynek.
Really?
And UFOs. Yeah, it's a really cool clip, so people have to check that out. I will get that in the Open Mind story, but they can go to Huffington Post and also see it. And, of course, I've got those links out there. But the other stories that came out, The Sun, of all places, wrote some stories, one of them about Travis Walton. Of course, we're all pretty familiar with his stories. But the cool one was Mark D'Antonio. And I don't know if I've heard him tell this story a lot because I've spent a lot of time with him, but I can't remember if he's told this story on one of my podcasts. I believe he has, but I've had him on quite a bit. You've had him on, right?
Yeah, he did. He told the story on my show.
The Navy sub story?
Right.
Yeah.
The fast mover.
Yeah, exactly. So he had never really told mainstream media about it, if you consider The Sun mainstream media, which I guess pretty much they are in the UK, even though they're a tabloid. And of course, if you go there, you'll see some nudity, especially girls in their bikinis whose tops fall off, or celebrities, you know, skinny dipping or whatever. That's one of their favorite things to write about. But they also like to write about UFOs, and so they wrote up a story on Mark's claims, and he was fine with it about, you know, Mark saying he was on this sub and sitting next to the sonar guy when the sonar guy caught this fast-moving object under the water and told his boss about it, and then he called it a fast mover. And then Mark asked the CEO, I guess, of the ship, hey, you know, I want to talk more about that fast mover, that thing that they caught. And I guess the guy told him, he said, are you having a good time, you know, on the ship, on the sub? And he's like, yeah, great time. He's like, well, let's keep it this way, which was his cue to kind of shut up about the whole thing. But the reason Mark was on the sub in the first place, I mean, civilians, I think rarely get to go on subs, but he was, exactly. Except for contractors, which is what he is, and that he makes like models for the Navy and stuff. And so he had a top secret clearance at the time. So he says later on, he asked some, you know, other officer with the military to tell him about the fast mover program. And this guy told him something like, you know, I can't tell you about that, or something like that. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting story.
Yeah, and other places are picking it up. It's in the International Business Times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going around.
Which is kind of cool, because especially the International Business Times was kind of a smaller news service. But it's getting more and more popular, and especially lately, it's had some exclusive news regarding politics and stuff that's put it kind of more in the limelight and being taken more seriously. So it's a good time to have, you know, if Mark wants exposure for this whole story, to get that in that paper. So yeah, it's right. Kind of cool they wrote that up.
So what was your time like out at the event?
It was great. It was a lot of fun. Got to meet the state director for MUFON in Wyoming. That's Richard Beckwith. He lives in, I think it's called Rock Point or Rock Spring. I think it's called the town he lives in Wyoming. And he's the city attorney out there. So he also recently got put on the MUFON's board, business board. So kind of that board that oversees the whole organization. So, yeah, really nice guy. He was really interesting. And then there was Chuck and Debbie, Mark D'Antonio, Travis Walton. I think that was all of us that were speakers. We all did like two talks each. But it was fun. It was kind of a hard place to get to. You had to fly into this town called Gillette and then drive an hour or so to Hewlett near the tower. And the tower is amazing. It's
I bet.
Mm-hmm. It's much
now,
more.
Now, what about other other rock structures around, or is this like
no
in the middle by itself?
I mean, there are outcrops kind of here and there, but it's kind of, it's really pretty out there. I mean, it's rolling hills. There are kind of gullies and stuff like that, you know, where the waters kind of cut these really cool formations. So it is really pretty out there. And then, you know, we were in the pines and stuff. And we're not far from the Black Hills there. So really, really pretty. But yeah, this thing just kind of juts out of the ground and there's nothing like it. I mean, totally different. And when I posted my pictures on Facebook, I did put a link to how it was formed so people can go see that. And it's kind of like, I think they call it a volcano cap or something like that. I forgot the terminology, but you can go see the geology on how it was made. And having petrified wood is not a part of that at all, which some people speculate. And it's kind of a running joke out there because there's this new thing that it's a petrified gigantic tree. But
someone sawed it perfectly. And
I can see how it kind of looks like that, but
it does.
But it is solid rock and it's really cool. I mean, it is odd and different. It's really unique. So it's kind of fun. We got to, Karen and I do a walk around it with Travis Walton, and he was in his suit and loafers. I was in my flip-flops, and there was lots of tourists and stuff. But it wasn't that big of a walk, long of a walk, and it was pretty cool.
Was the event well attended?
It was for what they wanted. So, for instance, the room we were in that we talked in could only hold 40 people.
And, oh my goodness!
And it was packed. So in that sense, it was good. I don't know if they're going to do it again, but they'll definitely need some more space if they do. But Bob Olson, who is kind of the host, he owns the Best Western that this place, the talks were held in. And he also, there's a golf course above it, and he builds the log cabins and stuff and log homes there. So there were some nice rooms we got to stay in, and we had a view of the tower, which was really cool. But he is a great guy, great host. And then they actually created an organization for the Devil's Tower UFO Rendezvous, and that was ran by a woman called Lori Tucker, and she was also very, very nice. She's really into UFOs and stuff, and kind of was the person who kind of got this whole thing rolling, and suggested it to Bob and others to bring some people into town, and it worked.
Wow. And are they planning on doing this for once a year or something?
I don't
like
know.
That?
I don't know. Yeah. They may or may not. I think they've got to figure that out. They got to look at, you know, their expenses versus the what they made, and that can take some time to figure out, especially when it comes to like a city event, because then they have to factor in, you know, did the town make money, not just on taxes, but did it bring business, and did the businesses make money, and was it worth, you know, everything they spend type of thing. Mm-hmm. The writer for The Sun who was out there is really cool, and she's writing some great stories. And so this stuff about Travis and Mark and then is getting out there, and then, you know, the Spielberg stuff. And I really loved using kind of the Spielberg thing and the momentum around Close Encounters to kind of also get the word out there about the United Nations and this thing that happened in the 70s, which is pretty important, I think.
Now, this is probably sounds layman, but I just don't know. Did they actually film the ending of Close Encounters right there?
Yeah, they did. They did film a lot of it there. So there was an actual camp, and they did film a lot of it. So, you know, it's back and forth. There was a lot of CG and some other stuff, but yeah.
Well, cool.
Cool stuff, but we better wrap it up. Thank you again for joining us for the news, Mr. Martin Chillin Willis.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Before we talk to our guest, we are going to do a short break. If you're listening to KGRA, you're going to hear some commercials here. Be sure to patronize these people because they keep KGRA on the air and all this great radio. So do it. Otherwise, if you're listening to the podcast, we'll have a short musical break and then we'll be back with our guest, Chuck Zukowski. Hang tight. Are back, and I want to remind you, you're listening to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am happy to welcome back to the show the UFO nut, not just a UFO nut, Chuck Zukowski.
Yay! Yeah, yeah. We'll have to explain the UFO nut stuff because there are a lot of UFO nuts out there. But well, thank you very much. I can't wait for our little conversation. It's always exciting to talk with you, Alejandro. I mean, I really can't remember the last time I actually got a chance to talk to you. It was way back about last Saturday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And just like the old days, for hours. So, and for longtime listeners, you were on the show years ago. You were one of my first guests and on probably two or three times a while ago, and you were on, in fact, and you can tell me if this is true or not, I was one of the first, if not the first podcasters to have you and your sister to come on to talk about the 37th parallel, for which now there's a book and a movie in the works and all this cool stuff.
Yeah, I think you were. I mean, it's pretty cool. You know, you're always right there at the cutting edge of technology. So I can't wait for, you know, the next couple of years, what you're going to, you know, spring on people, you know, some type of a holographic reality type of a podcast. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can't wait.
Holographic reality cast.
Yeah.
It's coming.
You bet. Let's start working on it.
Yep. Before you know it, I'm going to be tapping on your shoulder and saying, "Hey, Chuck," and you'll turn around and you'll be like, "What?" And I'll be like, "Hey, it's not really me. This is a hologram."
Whoa.
And at least then make it'll sure be, we'll be performing.
Make sure I have my pajamas on or something. Okay? Yeah. I mean, it would be really embarrassing.
That'll be pretty cool. So, yeah. So I think people will have to go way back if they want to hear a lot about the UFO nut and 37th parallel. But we'll touch on a lot of that stuff. But we were both recently in at Devil's Tower together. And but I guess let's get into this 37th parallel because that's kind of some exciting stuff going on right now. So you, they wrote a book about you. Like, let us know about how you were approached. What kind of how they pitch the book and who wrote it?
Yeah, you know, that's it's really interesting. What happened was I did the first season, just a small 15-minute segment on cattle mutilations for the Science Channel's Unexplained Files season one. And towards the end of my segment, I sprung on this 37th degree latitude theory where, you know, you have these events that happen across the U.S., animal mutilations and UFO sightings, and actually, you know, Open Minds, you know, played a part in that too. Something that you did, you know, with the most popular states had the most sightings. That's what it was. And so when they came around to season two, they called me and said, "Hey, what's this 37th degree latitude thing? What, you know, do you have any data to back it up?" And I go, "Huh? Do I?" So I just kind of like just dumped them just tons of data on it, GPS coordinates, the whole bit. They're going, "Whoa!" They got back to me and said, "Hey, would you actually mind doing a full hour show?" And I'm going, "What? That's awesome!" You know, rather than a 5-minute segment that we normally usually get. So I sat down with them and talked about the places we wanted to go or what I wanted to go and what they could do. And about a week and a half of shooting, you know, we had this 1-hour show. It was usually with the Unexplained Files, the one episode, 1 hour is usually cut into two segments covering two separate topics. And so this was like one of their first times where they had the whole hour show was one topic. They're a little leery at first, but, you know, once they realized how much was involved and where would we be going, you know, ending up in Area 51 and some other nifty things, they were really excited about it. So, you know, we did that. It had aired, and I think for a while there, it was number one. Matter of fact, it just aired not too long ago. When they played it in reruns, and this was, you know, we did this a couple of years back. That's one of the selected episodes that they always seem to want to do a rerun on. And I always know when it's a rerun because I get tons of emails. Well, I guess this movie executive, Bo Flynn from Flynn Pictures Productions, caught it on TV, and he's always wanted to do, and it's kind of funny I'd say this, a Close Encounters of the Third Kind type of movie as a kid. And then once he got involved in movie productions, you know, he thought, hey, this might be reachable. Obviously not to the grandeur of what the Steven Spielberg one was, but so he caught the episode. He went to the website and he goes, hey, you know, there's something here. So then, you know, they contacted me, and I was contracting at Qualcomm over in San Diego, because I still work, right? And I said, well, what? And he said, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we're kicking around the idea of maybe doing a movie or something on this, you know, on your theory, the 37th degree parallel. Because it was 37th degree latitude was actually what I did a press release a few years ago on. But when Science Channel did it, it was called the 37th Parallel Paranormal Highway of America. Mm. And they really liked that. And so they said, well, what we'd like to do is we're going to commission a New York Times best-selling author, Ben Mezrich, who's already written a couple of books that went to movies. One, I think, was called The Accidental Billionaire, or about Facebook.
Hmm.
And so that was his book. And then there was another one, I think it was called Breaking the Bank or something, about the MIT students that went to Vegas.
Hmm, yeah, I want to see that movie.
So he, you know, he's already done a couple of, you know, written a couple of books that goes to with the movies. So basically they contacted him and said, hey, what we need you to do is we need you to write a pitch, you know, for a movie / book. And we'll market or sell this pitch and see if another production company wants to pick it up and see if that's something people are interested in. So Ben Mezrich wrote this, you know, I'm kind of looking at it right now, you know, like a 32-page transcript on three acts. You know, the first act, you know, introduces me with a, you know, some type of sighting. The second act is kind of like, you know, what happens in between, right? And the third act kind of is a summary of what happened. But anyway, so he writes this. And here, it's really interesting, Alejandro, because I'm working at Qualcomm, and I'm doing this while I'm working. And it's a shared office, so I have to wait and call Ben Mezrich. I'm in California. Actually, I live in Colorado, but at the time I was in California contracting, Ben Mezrich's in Boston. So at lunchtime, I would go out to my truck in the parking lot. There was a parking structure, and I parked on top of the parking structure. And I was talking to him, and we're right near Miramar, so, you know, the jets are going over and the helicopters and stuff. So it was kind of interesting. And for the time I was there, I was working with Ben Mezrich, giving him information at my laptop on my lap, literally in my pickup truck. And we were going back and forth. And this went back and forth for about maybe, you know, a month or so. And he had enough information to pitch this little story idea. Well, so Bo Flynn got it. Yeah, Flynn Pictures got it. And they go, yeah, it's just pretty good. Okay, we're going to pitch it out there and see if another production company wants to pick it up. And, you know, you're really familiar with, you know, the movie business and TV business. If anybody out there, you know, when you watch a movie at the movies, at the very end, you'll see Sony or Fox or, you know, Warner Brothers, whatever. But then you'll see other production companies, too. So what they're doing now is, you know, rather than one production company flipping the bill for everything, they bring in other production companies to help offset the expenses. And then other production companies may have specialties in one area where another one would have, you know, a specialty in another area. So you can kind of see this collaboration if you stay and watch the credits at, you know, after, you know, you go to the movies. So basically, so they went to go pitch this, and even before they had a chance to pitch it out there to the industry, New Line Cinema, Warner Brothers, which is their parent company, says, "Ah, you're not pitching it. We want this." And they called me back and said, "Hey, Warner Brothers wants this. New Line Cinema, Warner Brothers wants this." I'm going, "What?" And and so they go, "Okay, now the next step is Ben Mezrich has got to write a book." So we could write a script from the book. And I'm going, "Well, isn't that the cart before the horse? I thought you always did a movie after a book was out, just based on, well, this is an idea that Bo Flynn wanted, something he wanted to pursue." And so he, you know, he found what he was looking for. So he needed a writer, a very high-level writer, you know, to write a book. So then they can write the script from the book. It basically, what it is Ben does all the work of putting everything together in the book, and you know, all the reference material, everything's there, and then it's easier for a screenwriter to take that and go from there. So I'm going, okay. So still in San Diego, and for the next few months, you know, back in my truck at lunchtime, mm-hmm. and you know, talking to Ben, and we put all this information together for a book, and the book came out. It's called The 37th Parallel. It came out last September 6th in hardback form. I don't make any money from the book, just to let you know.
Lame.
Nothing. I'd make nothing from the book because I signed a life rights contract with New Line Cinema. Actually, both Flynn Pictures, and then I had to sign another one with New Line Cinema, Warner Brothers. So I don't make anything from the book, but I looked at it this way, that there's a little bit of a legacy there in the book because it's about me and my family, and even my mom and dad are mentioned in it. So all our real names. So it's a little bit of a legacy there. And I thought, you know what, that's kind of cool. This guy, Ben Mezrich, his net worth is around $35 million. So you know, he's not a— yeah, he's just, you know, he's not just one of those, you know, fly-by-night type of writers, you know, writing and the printing off.
Well, they should have shared some of that with you, though. I mean, but I guess your thing is you'll make money with the movie, I hope.
Well, the thing is you know, I've always loved J. Allen Hynek in this scene at the very end of Close Encounters. Uh-huh. And I got to tell you. So this contract, they sent me this contract for my life rights, and I'm going over it and said, okay, I got to talk to a lawyer. I'm right here in California. It's the best place, right, for, you know, entertainment lawyers. And so the deal is, if somebody picks it up, anybody, I get a $2,000 bonus. If someone big picks it up, I get a $5,000 bonus. I'm going, whoa, okay. Yeah. You know, So I start contacting attorneys in California, and they started off at $3,500 and one up. just to look, I'm going, oh my God, if I got the $2,000 bonus, if someone picked it up, I'm out $1,000.
Yeah.
If I got the $5,000, I'm only making like $1,500. So, you know me, Alejandro, you know, yeah, I love to do research. I like to get in there, and you know, for about 2-3 weeks, I was on the internet. I was searching all these places, looking at movie contracts or life right contracts, seeing exactly. And basically, I turned the contract 3 separate times just on my own. I mean, I didn't have the money to do it after that, mm-hmm. you know, to pay somebody. And so I made sure that that I was a technical advisor. I made sure that I could still do— unfortunately, they wouldn't let me have my own TV show, but I still, in the contract, I'm able to do spots, you know, do episodes on other shows and stuff, you know, something like that, and still do the stuff that I love to do with my website and everybody else and conferences and all that. So I made sure that was very clear, and they agreed. I'm going, okay. And it's a 2-year, actually a 3-year contract. So I went ahead and, you know, we went through and signed it. I had to go to the Chase Bank and get it notarized. I mean, I'm doing all this myself, and off we go. So, like I said, I'm not making anything from the book. But so what Ben Mezrich did is he flew me and my wife out to Boston for the book release party. God, it was really cool. Mm-hmm. And put us up in a really nice hotel out there, and we were out in Boston for about 4 or 5 days, and got to see Boston and Salem, and I loved going to Salem. That was so cool.
Yeah, I've always heard Boston is pretty cool.
Oh, it is pretty cool. You know, there's so much history there, as opposed to more history there than opposed to Colorado, or Arizona, because, everything was right there. Mm-hmm. The Boston Tea Party anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's how that kind of went. And so the book came out, and the book, it was really, really interesting because it's a nonfiction book. And everything in the book, if anybody picks it up out there, July of this year, it went to paperback. So you can find, the 37th parallel for, a third the price that it was before. Probably find it cheaper now.
Yeah, so it's funny because they had contacted me a couple times to ask me if I wanted to interview Ben. And I thought, well, I don't know what I would ask him because I've already interviewed you and your sister, Debbie Ziegelmeyer, who's your paranormal research partner, so to speak. And so it's like, I just don't know what I'd ask him because I've already asked the source,
Yeah. Well, it's pretty cool. I mean, you still may want to talk to him because the neat thing is he was brought up in a skeptic family. And so he was a skeptic. And not that, I'm tooting my own horn, If it was, it would be an Ooga horn. But it's just that after he wrote the book, and he actually talked to a couple of my animal mutilation ranchers. He interviewed them and to get some information from the source. And then he interviewed a representative from Bigelow Aerospace because Bigelow is a part of this book too.
That's cool.
Yeah, due to the Roswell piece of metal that Bigelow Aerospace started to analyze for me.
Mm-hmm. And you're getting choppy as you speak about it because you were not happy with, to put it lightly, the work they did on that.
Oh yeah, exactly. We go in that later, but basically, he became a believer. It was really really interesting. He goes, "Oh my God!"
Because of working with you all. That's cool.
Yeah, and really, really cool. So so the book's out there, and we got some really, really good reviews on it from actual, professional reviewers liked it. Amazon were about 3 stars because most people don't like the ending. Now, most people that pick up a book, a nonfiction book, which is based on real-life scenarios, they expect to see some type of ending, but there's no ending to this book.
Yeah,
because I'm still alive. Mm-hmm. At least let me pinch myself. Yeah, I'm still alive. I'm still doing investigations. We still haven't found, solid proof that aliens exist. We got all kinds of circumstantial evidence, but nothing to go. Here you go, done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people were looking for.
Yeah.
Other people just loved it, but some of the people, they were expecting to see an ending, and when you get to the ending of the book, it's really creative what he did. It's the first time he's ever done anything like this for an ending, but it's almost like when you pick up a piece of paper that Stanton Friedman got from the archives, where there's information there but there's not information there.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of read between the lines. He kind of did something like that. And the reviewers, the professional reviewers, just loved it because it was something that they weren't expecting. But normal people that read it, the ones that are into ufology, they get it. The ones that picked it up because they were a Ben Mezrich fan were kind of iffy. So that's why we kind of got like the 3 stars or so on Amazon. But so now the book's out there. The New York Times picks it up, and they don't know what to do with it. There was a review done by one of the science editors because they don't know.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. And this is why I really like, what you're doing, all I have with the podcast and the UFO Congress and getting the information out there to the public and because we need more people aware. So now you have the New York Times going, well, what do I do with this? This is a very, very well known writer. His publisher is Simon & Schuster, So what do we do with this? So they go, well, you know, it's nonfiction. Let's give it – they don't have a UFO paranormal department. So they give it to the science editor. And the science guy reads it. He goes, well, you know, well, great. We know we're just going to go with that. You know, yeah. Philip Klass just picked it up, and he's reading it. And so it bounced in the science section of the New York Times bestselling for like 2 months. So we got, wow. You know. So it's in essence, I'll say it. It's a New York Times best-selling book. I mean, for 2 months, but you know,
hey, that's better than nothing.
Something's better than nothing. They didn't know where to put it.
Mm-hmm.
So while that's going on, now we have New Line Cinema, Warner Brothers, and Flynn Pictures Productions. We have three production companies that are looking for a screenplay writer to write the movie. Now that there's a book, right? And I interviewed – well, I didn't interview him, but I got to talk with two of the three. I didn't get to talk to the third or the second one. Actually, there's a first one. The second one I didn't get a chance to talk to, and the third one I did. And it took them – they were so particular about this. It took them 6 months to get the writer that they wanted to write the screenplay. And I can't tell you his name, and I don't know why. Maybe they're waiting for the first draft should be done within – couple weeks, actually, from what I told, the beginning of October sometime is a first draft, and then he's contracted for a second draft because everybody makes changes, and now you've got three movie studios mm-hmm. that are going to make changes, right? So, but I can tell you not, this.
Okay.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, sorry? You're just going to give us something juicy.
So I can tell you this. The person who's writing the screenplay has written for Robert De Niro, Matt Damon, and Robert Downey Jr.
Whoa.
Okay, so, you know, it's not like he wrote for Carrot Top or anything like that. I mean, he's wrote some big-name people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's not a slouch out there. And he was a really cool guy. He started writing just after Memorial Day. Matter of fact, he wanted to meet me and see my house and meet my wife, Tammy.
Cool.
So he lives, obviously, in California. Over in his, you know, in the northern side.
Well, knowing you, you're kind of a jokester, so maybe Carrot Top would have been best.
Yeah, I like Carrot Top. Yeah. You know? Well, I don't know. He's had a lot of plastic surgery lately. So
he's
I'm
a weird looking
sure.
fella.
Now he is. He looks like Shatner now.
Really? But, wow.
Well, you know, every time you get those tucks, you all look like Shatner. Mm.
Well, that's really cool. That's really interesting. And so they'll probably add some drama. Like, they're going to have to figure out how to add some drama. Of course, in this arena, when you're looking into the paranormal, they always add some fear. So are you afraid of all of what they'll come up with? I mean, we just spent time with Travis Walton, and of course, we know what they did with his movie.
Well, the nice thing about the person that's writing it now, we talked back and forth. And he kind of gave me his idea. What he wants to do,
mm-hmm.
But it's still kind of hush hush, and you know, and really they don't tell us. But the main thing is now obviously it's not going to be like the book, you know. They're going to, but the neat thing is all our names are going to be used. So my name,
that's
my wife's
cool.
name. So they're not going to be any pseudo names.
Hopefully that's good.
Yeah. I mean that could be okay, and there's going to and some of the events in my life will be featured in the movie. But obviously will be amplified times 100, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, this is a movie, so I'm guessing, you know, I was joking with him. I said, just do me a favor, you know, somehow or another get my character to, like, chase down aliens and we get in a big fight, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
you've got an alien in the headlock.
Yeah, really, and I'm giving him a noogie on the top of his head or something.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know, or something like that. But no, they're really serious about this, and so he's pretty happy. I talk to him every now and then. I'll email him every couple of weeks. I go, how's it going? Is everything okay? Do you have
cool.
any questions?
Well, let's pause for a second. I'm going to have to go to a break. Remind people you're listening to KGRA. If you're not listening to the podcast, for podcasters, you're going to hear a little bit of music. And for KGRA, we're going to go to commercial break. We'll be right back with Chuck Zukowski. All right, we are back. You're listening to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am Alejandro Rojas, and the guy on the other side of the line is Chucky Z. That's what I like to call you sometimes.
You know, that's what my sisters call me.
Well, and I want to touch on this because, you know, you talk about how the movies a lot about your family and they use the real names and everything. And your family is so into, I wanted you to talk about a little bit about you and Debbie in a second. I'll tell you what in particular, but how your family's really into this because, you know, we haven't, I haven't had you on for, I don't know, it's probably been years since we've done a podcast together. But since then, you and your sister used to work together, but now two of your other sisters are working in this field. One of them is working, I think, on staff for MUFON, Linda, and then another one, is it Diane?
Diane.
Helps out. They were both at the symposium, you know, right next to our table, the MUFON symposium, helping out. So, yeah, you've got this whole family affair thing going on.
Oh, you know, it's even deeper than that. If anybody reads the book, And we talked about this with the family. My mom, when she was a little girl, had a sighting. She lived in a little town of Morenci in Arizona. And, you know, they didn't have a lot of rooms in the house, you know, bedrooms, because they, you know, my mom's family had three boys and three girls. And my mom ended up having three boys and three girls. So it's kind of interesting how that planned out. But so my mom's like sleeping on a cot in the hallway near my, you know, her mom and dad's bedroom. And a couple times at night, and this is exactly what she says, you know, that, you know, she saw these little people coming in. Hmm. So the history of ufology started with my mom and her family. And then I interviewed my aunt a few years ago, and her sister, obviously. And she had a sighting. They were driving from San Pedro, California, to Arizona, to a little town called Safford. And, you know, back in the day, there wasn't any rest areas. There wasn't Interstate 10, so I think they had to take 40. And what they used to do, and I remember doing it as a kid too, because, you know, my dad would drive. You get tired, you pull off the side of the road, but you'd pull off the road into the desert. You drive into the desert a little bit and black out, you know, turn all your lights off and stuff. So, you know, you don't have to worry about any, you know, any
cars hitting you. No, bad guys.
Bad guys or anything like that. So you kind of sneak off to the side that way. And the families used to sleep like that. I remember doing it myself.
Hmm.
So they're out in the desert. They're in the California desert close to the Arizona border. And my aunt, you know, she's in the passenger seat. Her husband's, my Uncle Roy's in the driver. And then the three kids are in the back, my three cousins. And she looks up. Everybody's asleep in the car. And she looks up, and there's an alien staring in the window right
what?
At her.
What?
And
when did you learn this story? Recently?
We actually started, we learned something about it when the whole family got together back in 2002 when my dad passed away.
Wow.
And we had everybody there, and because everybody knew at that point that Debbie and I were doing investigations. And so my Aunt Flora comes up to me and says, hey, Chuck, my cousin Flora, you have to go talk to, you know, Auntie Petra. She's got something to tell you. And, oh, my God, are you kidding me? So now I have two women, you know, that had events, my mom and then her sister. So this started with them. And
what happened when she saw the alien? Sorry,
it's so cute when she was telling me this, because she said, she put her hands over her face and she's like, I covered my face. And then I looked again and they were still there, and I covered my face. And she looked up and they were walking away. Now, I can't tell you, I mean, I talked to her about, you know, missing time or anything like that. But at that point, she wouldn't have known if there was missing time, because she just remembers. She did say that right afterwards she fell asleep, which I thought was really interesting. She didn't stay up. I mean, I would have stayed up the whole night.
No,
I would have been able
You'd
to go
be
to
freaked
sleep.
Out.
But
I would
remembers.
Have had to have changed my sleeping attire.
Yeah. So she does remember waking up in the car with everybody else. So at one point she did go to sleep. I can't tell you if there was any missing time, and she can't tell me that either. But, you know, that was an experience. So that out of six kids in my family, Debbie and I, you know, I started doing this first, and then Debbie caught on a few years later and started. I've been doing, like, I think she's been doing it about 20 years, and I've been doing it just over 30, 32 years now.
And wasn't the case, if I remember correctly, like, you got a hold of Debbie, and you didn't even know she was doing the investigations. And then all of a sudden, she's part of MUFON.
Exactly. I didn't know all that. You know, she's living in Missouri. I just moved out of California. I was in Colorado, and I was working on Roswell stuff. You know, that was my main focus in California. And so I think I contacted her, and I was asking her about, I have Joplin spook lights or something goofy like that. And as it turns out, not only did she know about it, she knew a lot about it. I'm going, what? Again, you know, it's funny. Yeah, you know, your own sibling, and now it's different. People go, well, that's kind of crazy because blah, blah, blah. And I go, yeah, but we didn't have Facebook. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have email. Mm-hmm. You know, we really, all that was coming up in the 90s. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as common as it is now. We still had to write letters and make phone calls, and there was no texting. You know, mm-hmm. It's all different now with the millennials. So we talked to her and said, hey, you know what? How would you like to work together with me on Roswell? And that's where we really started working on Roswell together, and which was a really good idea too, because you know, I hate to say this, you know, but what's the nice way of saying I farmed out my sister to help?
Let's just call it what it is. You pimped her out.
I pimped her out. I mean, no sex involved, obviously, but I pimped her out with Walter
Hodge. Used her as bait.
And as bait for Walter Hodge and Glenn Dennis, the guys over at the museum. They've already. I've been there for a few years. If anybody picks up the book, you'll see a picture of me and my three kids, and you barely see my wife. But you'll see we're standing in front of a motorhome. And so back in the day, I would take the motor home, and we go on vacation by way of Roswell or by way of Aztec or by way of, you know, of Taos and all these other places.
But
so
I'm sure it's worked the other way too, because, you know, even doing real estate or doing this sort of thing, you know, it works with my girlfriend and I. Some people tend to gravitate towards the man or the woman, you know, and open up to one and not both. So I'm sure some of your witnesses who are female kind of liked opening up to you more than your sister.
Absolutely. And sometimes I come, and you know this, I come across a little strong sometimes. and you do know that. So and Debbie's a lot different. We have two different personalities. I'm a little, you know, she's a little bit country. I'm a lot of bit rock and roll. That's kind of usually how we do it. And so it's really easy. She got us, you know, in to Glenn Dennis's office, and we chatted, and ultimately we got a hold of GPS coordinates to you know, to where the debris site is, and GPS coordinates to the Jim Ragsdale site, and off we went. You know, I mean, right after we got the coordinates, it was the next day. We were in my Jeep, and off we went. I mean, it was that quick, and it's been that way ever since. So it's a lot of fun. Now, my other two sisters, my sister Linda's the oldest, sister Diane is the third, so Debbie's in between the two, she's the second, then it's me, and then I have a brother, Andy, and then a brother, Ron. And I think what happened is because, as siblings go, my sister and I were getting a lot of attention in the ufology, and the other two sisters going, well, we want some, you know, we want to know what's going on too.
Well, so, you better be careful because they might listen to this. Linda is on my Facebook a lot, and from what I understand, at least when you're younger, she's not afraid to.
Oh God, she still isn't. I'm afraid of her.
Smack you know? Around a little if she's got it.
Yeah, I love my sisters. You know, all three of them. So I think what happened with Linda and Diane. Yeah, Linda was the first. She likes to get involved, and it's, you know, she saw Debbie and I were doing the UFO stuff, and she was intrigued with it. So she got involved, and one thing led to another, and you know, she's working for MUFON, and then she. I think Diane was already sort of getting involved, because at that point, what was happening was, you know, Debbie would go to the MUFON symposiums in California, and when she was there, or the meetings, and when she was there, she would visit, you know, the family, and so that kind of it kind of sparked her interest, and they got more and more involved in that, and I think that's what happens. I always like to think that there's a little bit of jealousy there because they wanted to be with, you know, with their brother.
Well, it was funny because in Roswell, you know, you were like, oh, no, my sisters are here because, you know, just this last year we were all speaking for the paper. And Linda was like, oh, he's just worried I'm going to boss him around. And you were like, yep, exactly.
Exactly.
But she's doing well. She's learning. I mean, just today, there was this story, and unfortunately, one of our fellow researchers, I guess I'll just use his name, Michael Sala. Unfortunately, he's very loose in the way he researches, I feel, and he speculates a lot. And recently, he's posted these pictures of what, to me, clearly look like balloons and said, oh, these are evidence that the Air Force is working with aliens, because these sightings, quote-unquote, were over McGill Air Force Base. And so McGill made fun of this comment that he was making, and one of the local papers wrote about it. And your sister looked at the images, and one of them, she said, that looks like a solar balloon, because there's these big, you're probably familiar, but these big long balloons that sometimes that you fill up with air, and actually the heat from the sun heats them up and they float, and that's why they're called solar balloons, and they often get mistaken for UFOs. And she's exactly right. I think she's exactly right. And I was like, wow, Linda's, you know, getting to know her stuff.
She is getting to it. And it's really cool to see that, too, because, you know, I can have conversations with all three of my sisters. You know, Debbie obviously is the expert, but, you know, we can all sit down together. And we did at Roswell. You know, we would have drinks afterwards, and we talk UFO stuff. And it was so cool that I could talk UFO stuff with my three sisters, and they all knew. And they could all relate, and they could always – and not only that, but they could add stuff too, which was even more, you know, cool, mm-hmm. rather than just sitting there going, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Well, it is cool, too, because, you know, Linda, she's in California working with headquarters of MUFON. Debbie is on the board, the business board, and she's a state director in Missouri. And then there's you know, working the field in Roswell in Colorado, and then working with Bennon on your book and everything. So you all have these different areas you live in. And I think Diane's out here in Arizona, right?
No, she's in California also.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're all in these different areas, so you all are seeing different things and can share all this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I'm also Director of Animal Mutilation Investigations for MUFON, too.
Oh, I forgot.
Now, Debbie wrote me into that one, but it's okay. You know, I'm more of a consultant. Cattle mutilation investigations or cattle mutilations are probably one of the scariest investigations that I ever do or I've ever done. Well, yeah, you obviously know that. And knowing it firsthand, you know that when you walk in on an animal, you really don't know how it died. You really, really don't. I mean, you know, there's always that thought behind that it could be a virus. And now, and now you're going to be infected with the virus or something else, right? Or some type of bacteria or something we don't know about. And then, I mean, just natural stuff. Okay, now you say, you pull that all aside, you go, okay, here this animal died, but now we don't know how it died because it died by an unknown entity. So how did they kill it? Now you got to worry about that too. So one of the things that, you know, and even today when I talk to people, I always say, you know, as a director of animal mutilation investigations for MUFON, when I talk to anybody, goes, oh, I want to do that. Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm going, no. it's just not as fun as going out looking for lights. This is, you know, there's a lot of pre-training, a lot of research, a lot of prep work first before you do your first one, or you'll just muck it up, or you'll muck yourself up or something, or you'll make a fool of yourself to the rancher and that'll be it. Because animal mutilation, it's really cool. And really, it's any type of it's all different types of UFO investigations, especially craft sightings. You really have to earn the respect of the witness.
Mm-hmm.
You really do. And we don't get a lot of the good stuff. You know, they don't get called in. It's word of mouth. you know, you hear this, you hear that. And then if you have a contact somewhere, the contact's going to call you or contact you somehow. And it's and because you've already got that little bit of respect. And then just by the word of one – and this happened a couple of times. Just because one rancher said, hey, this guy is on the level. I gave you know, you got my word. That's all it takes because these are ranchers. These are cowboys. You know, they don't need sign on the dotted line. They say, you know, hey, you know, a handshake and you're good to go. It's really, really cool. One of my most favorite types of investigations because you're working with rural America. You're right out there. And, you know, who knew I'd be sitting there walking through cattle, you know, walking through cattle ranches and walking through the herd. And of course, avoiding the bulls. But, you know, I was a city boy.
Yeah. Well, that's what was fun because, of course, we did that one early one together. And I learned very quickly because of that smell, I didn't want to do this anymore. I mean, it was hard to be by the animal. But like you said, working with the ranchers was incredible because, you know, you got to get really the sense of wonder that they had, and they got to share their experience and how, you know, they see dead animals all the time, but when they're really scratching their head, and then the neighbors are coming by and saying, hey, what are you guys doing out here? And, you know, we're explaining and they're saying, oh, we've got these two weirdos out here who want to look at my dead cow. But, you know, but they're saying, you know, and they're explaining that, yeah, we don't know how the hell that thing's got is dead either, because there are other ranchers who also experience this. So
it's that's crazy. The best part. Yeah, I mean, 2016, I northwestern part of Colorado, in July we had an animal mutilation. In Nevada in August, we had two of them in the same ranch, 25th and 31st. In September of 28th, we had four in Wisconsin. That's, you know, that's just the ones that I dealt with. And for everyone that I hear about, usually the rancher tells us about other things. The Wisconsin one, lights were seen, and the Nevada one, lights were seen. Lights were seen in the Nevada one a year before, and then a week afterwards. In the Wisconsin one, where I got to work on two of the four, and that's why I say possibly four, because the other two kind of mimicked the first two. But lights were seen in that area a week afterwards. And then this year, we've had, as far as I know, it's been kind of slow for animal mutilations. We had an animal mutilation in Arizona, near Mobile, Arizona. And other than that, it's been some Bigfoot sightings and ghost investigations and stuff like that. So this isn't something that's going away. It's still out there, and God, it's so exciting too when you have to deal with it. Oh, I got to tell you real quick. I know we're
okay.
Probably
we're almost out of time.
Real quick, the cattle mutilation in Wisconsin. The first mutilation, the lady called the company to pick up the carcass to move it, to get it out. And she went out the next day, and the animal was gone. And they go, cool. And so she called them up because I said, okay, where'd you take it? Because I want to call them, and I want them to see if they've ever seen an animal like that dead that had all these strange cuts. She calls them up, and they said, no, we didn't pick up the animal because when the driver went by and saw what the animal looked like, it looked biological. Like maybe there was biological cuts and stuff, and they deemed it as a hazard, so they didn't pick it up. Yet somebody picked up that animal.
Wow.
And took it. Yeah.
That's really weird. So that's a good one. So when is the movie? When do you think the movie might be coming out?
Well, obviously, we need the screenplay first. So, you know, once we get the screenplay out, they've already have a couple of actors that have been following this now for about a year.
A couple of actors for you?
Yeah, well, for me or for parts in the movie. And I'll just give you a hint. And
the Schwarzenegger. Reason I can give you,
no, it's actually no, he's gone. No. it's the guy who plays Iron Man.
Yeah. Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, he's interested in it, and the only reason why I can tell you that is because USA Today broke that news earlier this year.
Really? So maybe Gwyneth Paltrow will play Debbie.
Well, you know, I don't know. I basically he's just interested in it from what from You know, but it's just like you get some actors that are just interested in the roles, and it's just from what I hear is like, you know, they've contacted the studio and say, yeah, it's kind of cool concept. You know, let us know when, you know, you get a screenplay and we'll grab the screenplay and look at it or whatever. I mean, now that's been a couple of months ago. And last I heard in May is what, you know, that he was still interested in it. But, you know, he could be interested in a couple different areas of the movie too. You know, but it's kind of cool to have
some
big names.
Yeah, very cool.
Some big names.
Well, you'll have to stay in touch, you know. We'll have to have you on and get some updates and have you back in a not-too-distant future. And hopefully we'll see each other again soon. It's always fun hanging out. And what we've been working together for probably, has it been maybe 15 years, you think?
Yeah, you know, little buddy's still popping up out there. I go back and check it. Every time I'm over there, I stop and talk to
people.
One of
our sightings, we worked in South Park.
Yeah, in South Park, yeah.
One of your favorite shows, too.
Yeah, because it has aliens. Yay!
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show again. And it's always good talking to you. And really excited. Congratulations.
Hey, well, thank you very much. And for your listeners out there, if you have any questions, go to ufonut.com and just email me. It's one of those things that I was called at the very beginning. They called me a nut, so I just decided to roll with it and make a web page and just go there, and I'll answer any questions.
All right. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you so much to Chucky Z for being on the show, the original UFO nut, or at least the UFO nut. Yep, you can visit him at ufonut.com. And you know what's kind of helpful for the rest of us? Because if someone says, man, you're just nothing but a UFO nut, you could be like, no, I'm not UFO nut. Chuck is the UFO nut. So thank you for that service you provide us, Charles. Anyway, Chuck is a great guy. It's great to be able to catch up with him. We'll have Debbie Ziegelmeyer on in the not-too-distant future. She had some great stuff to say at Devil's Tower, some really interesting cases that she covered. So a wonderful family, the Zukowskis. So if you see them online, they're on my Facebook periodically. Say hi. There's a number of them out there as we discussed. So also look out for the book. It is called 37th Parallel and written by Ben Mezrich. So you can find that at your local bookstore. Really interesting stuff. We'll have to watch out for the movie. How cool would that be if Robert Downey Jr. is playing him? Wild, man. Really wacky, wild stuff. Otherwise, the UFO Congress, we have a bunch of new people listed, so you've got to check that out. Really, really cool stuff that I think you're going to love. Also, we have Michael Carter, by the way, someone we've had on quite a bit. It's a lot of fun. He's going to be speaking, but many others, so you'll have to check that out. It's updated on a regular basis. There's only a week left to get the super early bird discount. That is the cheapest you'll be able to get tickets at the entire year. So go online, go to ufocongress.com right now and go get tickets. Otherwise, we have a lot of really cool stories at openminds.tv right now on Spielberg, on Nick Popen, and the UK's most incredible UFO photo. Ooh, really good stuff. And then I wrote one today on Mark D'Antonio. You know, we talked about that earlier in the show. So everything that Martin and I talked about, you can find at openminds.tv. Be sure to patronize also Martin's show, UFO Podcast. Thank you, Martin, for being on the show. And at ufocongress.tv or openminds.tv, you can watch the videos on demand. Now you can watch videos for free. So tons, hundreds, literally over 100 UFO lectures from some people you'll never ever see again because they've either passed or they just don't do UFO lectures. So you'll be able to check that out at ufocongress.com as well. I also want to thank the people who do the music. So Caleb Hanks with the opening and close music and Systematics. What a cool name. They do that bumper music, and I've played their music before. Really, really cool stuff. Systematics is what they're called. So thank you to those who have donated music. Otherwise, I want to thank, of course, the most important people of all, the listeners. That is you. Thank you so much for joining me every week. And guess what? We're going to have a show next week, too. So I know we had to miss a show because I was at the Devil's Tower. But, you know, lots of really cool stuff resulted from that. So please, please forgive me. That is it for this week. We'll talk to you soon. Until next time, adios, muchachos.